Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In my life, I've been able to be in some places where I, at least I thought I was pretty far out from civilization. I mean, whether it's up in the mountains in Colorado or up in Montana or Western Texas or down in the jungles of Venezuela, I've been some places where I didn't at least think there was that much habitation or access. In my life, I've been able to be in some places where I, at least I thought I was pretty far out from civilization. I mean, whether it's up in the mountains in Colorado or up in Montana or Western Texas or down in the jungles of Venezuela, I've been some places where I didn't at least think there was that much habitation or access. And then I did a research recently and I came across a project called Project Remote that is probably the most fascinating thing I've seen in years. And it's a project by a family, the Means family, Ryan and Rebecca Means, who both have degrees in various aspects of wildlife ecology and zoology and forestry. And they set out to locate the most remote spots in the United States of America. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chester. Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Well, let's just start from the beginning. How did Project Remote begin?
Well, I'll tell you, it was an evolution, really, Chester, but there was a sort of an epiphany, gate-opening moment about 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. One of us, it happened to be me, I was walking down a beach in Florida, and it was completely crowded and packed, like you can imagine Florida beaches to be. And sure. I was at a time in life reaching my middle age, I suppose you might call it, approaching 40 at that time. And mm-hmm. I was itching and wondering about something meaningful that I could do, that we could do to contribute to knowledge, to do something exciting, wonderful, amazing. But we love remoteness too. And we love anything outdoors. So I'm walking down the beach, and I'm wondering to myself, how can I get as far away from this circus as humanly possible? And could I actually get that done in our home state of Florida? Mm-hmm. What is it now, the third most populous state in the country? And so I'm wondering about this. And first, you got to think about remote. How do you get away from people, and what does it mean? And the word remote pops up. And so what's the definition of remote? And I'm thinking about this as I'm walking down the beach. It's like, well, it's getting as far away from humans as possible. Mm-hmm. And how could you do that? And how could you know that you are actually doing it and quantify it? So I got to start. I started thinking about the quantification of remoteness and how and whether we could actually locate or even precisely calculate the exact farthest location from it all, if you will, civilization, mm-hmm. what that means, humans, right? And so enter my wife's skill set. I got so excited thinking about this concept of literally precisely calculating the remotest location from civilization in our state, our home state of Florida, that I ran home from that hike, shared the idea with Rebecca. We poured a glass of wine, had dinner, and really begun to hash out our idea for doing that in the state of Florida, to precisely calculate the remotest location using her skill set with GIS. And then literally, once we did that, once we thought of doing that, we just absolutely had to stand there. We knew that we had to be wherever this precise calculation would take us. But you know what? There was one little problem with that.
What's that?
I wouldn't call her a problem.
I don't call her a problem.
Ah, your daughter, Skylar, right?
Skyla, yes. Yeah. So she was about 5 months at the time. Mm-hmm. And so we knew we were going to take her with us, but Absolutely. that that added some logistical issues. But the other part of the story is that, so once we do Florida, then we want to do other states as well. And mm-hmm. as we started calculating how far you could get from a road in other states, it shocked us just as much as I'm sure it shocked you when you were reading on the website. So then we realized it's a lot bigger of a story than just us trying to get away from it and have a wilderness experience as a family. And it was a larger issue across the country that you just can't get very far from a road. The road network has expanded to the point that we don't even know where all the roads are. And so it became alarming as we were calculating more and more states, and you were getting 2.7 miles from a road or 1.3 miles from a road and in states that you thought you could get a lot farther.
I had a conversation with Jack Hanna, the famous wildlife host, one time, and he was talking about how developed America is and, you know, even other many parts of the world. And he said that, you know, you think you're in the wild, but if you really look around, you're not that far out in the wild in many places. And so I thought that was kind of interesting in what you're talking about here.
He's absolutely right, Chester. As a matter of fact, we had to make a definition.
Yeah.
In order to do what we were going to do, we had to create and develop a working definition of remoteness. And we're scientists by profession. We're outdoor scientists, biologists, and we got to thinking about how to create a precise definition that would allow us to make precise calculations and then apply the same methodology state by state and then be able to make comparisons between the states here. And so I tell you what, it took a long time, longer than you might think, to create a powerful definition of remoteness. I'll save that story, but what we finally figured on was distance from a road or otherwise human habitation that might be off of the road system. We're going to find that in Alaska, as a matter of fact. There are villages all out in the wilderness out there. You got to fly in only. And so we amended our maximum distance from a road definition to also include off-road villages. And so, you know, there are things, there are towers, road. What does that equal? We had to really hash out the definition of a road.
And yeah, because I've actually found like landlocked roads before. Like,
yes.
Yeah, like, you know, an old landing strip or something that was, you know, years ago was out in the middle of a forest that had been cleared and no one's messed with it in all the years.
Okay, well, in the case of that, we would find that to be a positive thing. And you know what? We've ran into in our nation's wilderness areas and some of our wildlands on the way to state remote spots, we have seen old roads being restored back to native habitat. And man, we are two thumbs up about that.
For
sure. I
think
that's wonderful. In fact, we think that America is so dang developed that eventually at some point we're going to have to, as a country, come together and decide to make it less roaded. And we've got examples of how to restore roads back to native habitat sprinkled throughout the country.
So what is the exact... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, what is a road? Well, let road equal paved, unpaved, people's driveways, ORV tracks that are mappable and mapped, railroad tracks, power line right-of-ways, anything else, honey?
Beaches, according to your Texas article.
Basically, anything that allows for the intermittent or frequent travel of motorized vehicles, that's basically where we're at now. And it can be public or private, too, mind you. Most of the Midwest is a road, we believe, because of the passage of giant combines frequently. and people's driveways and ranch roads. And if we can zoom in from space on our mapping software and see tracks on the land, we're calling it a road. And so that leads us into the difficulty state by state to making these calculations. It is painstaking. And I'm going to hand you to Rebecca for that one.
Well,
she,
you know,
the calculation.
I'm not a math person, so that would totally blow my mind. Like, you know, so I have to go to smarter people like you for this. You know, just so, give me the GPS coordinate, I'll venture out there and see what I can find critter-wise. But
when we come back on More Outdoors, we're going to learn exactly what kind of critters they encounter in the most remote locations. And one of the most fascinating subjects I've ever had the privilege of doing an interview about, this is Project Remote, the ultimate in social distancing in the age of COVID-19.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. This is Chester Moore, and we're continuing our conversation with Project Remote. God, this is an incredible topic, and we're excited to have these very special people on the air.
This is a gigantic undertaking, and you started in Florida, which is fascinating. I mean, it's your home state, but very wild in terms of a lot of, you know, the Everglades and Okefenokee and a lot of beautiful, a lot of trees, a lot of wildlife, but obviously a lot of people. And so just kind of start us off in your calculation of Florida.
Well, the way the calculations work is that they're using a GIS software called ArcMap. Mm-hmm. When we decided to use distance from road, that was that, you know, you have to come up with a quantifiable definition of remote if you're going to calculate it, and you're going to calculate it from state to state. And so we thought about things like cell towers, and we even thought about hiking trails. But the reality is that not all hiking trails are mapped, and so there's not the data that to mm-hmm. map those mm-hmm. hiking trails. And obviously people use hiking trails, so our definition of remote is not necessarily, okay, we're going to get away from all humans. It's we're getting away from the concentration. And so we know that roads, there are data for roads for each state. And so we chose the road aspect. The mapping program is what actually calculates the distance, and it creates basically a 30 meter by 30 meter grid across the whole state, and then it finds the maximum distance from a road that you can get. Mm-hmm. But what we found is that not all roads are part of the state road data. And that was the story for every state that I calculated across the country, is that I would calculate the spot, and then I'd zoom in on satellite imagery, and then there would be a road there, and I'd have to digitize in the roads and recalculate. And sometimes I had to do this 50, 60 times, because the roads just are not, either they're not public roads, so the state is not keeping track of them, uh-huh. or they're new roads and the data just are not updated. And so it's taken, you know, hours and hours and hours, weeks and weeks and weeks to get the accurate amount of roads for the program to then map the farthest you can get from one.
That's incredible. What I like about this is how in-depth. This is really, it's like citizens, this is real science, you know, and like, it's not like, okay, we're just going to go and we're going to go, we went 10 miles in the woods, we didn't see a person or a house. You guys are actually like going in and making this quantifiable for, you know, using this around the nation. And Florida, how far out could you get in Florida away from a road, a cell tower, all the different applications you put to this?
I'll tell you what, it has one of the remotest state maximum remote spot.
Really?
At just a little bit over 17 miles from a road. It's 17.1, I believe.
Wow.
And I bet you can already guess where a place like that might reside in our overcrowded state.
Somewhere in the Everglades area?
That's right. You got it. You got it, man. And so it's actually along the coastline. It is inside the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Wilderness area, along the southwest coastline, inside Everglades National Park, south of Everglades City. And that was a heck of a three-day boating adventure for a new family. heading out to their very first state remote spot.
And when we started this project, well, we didn't really know we were starting a project when we went to document Florida, but we were not looking at islands. We were not factoring islands into our calculations.
Okay.
And since then, we have, you know, every state presents a new challenge that we have to decide, okay, does this count? Does this count? So since we documented the Florida mainland remote spot, which is in the Everglades National Park, we then decided to include islands, because if you just look at Florida, the Florida Keys are developed, right?
Sure.
So you can develop islands, and there are lots and lots of people living on islands. So once we incorporated islands into our calculation, the remote spot, actually the actual remote spot, is potentially out on Dry Tortugas National Park, which is kind of ironic because it is a very popular, there's a ferry that goes out there, but we have not
haven't confirmed the calculation there. Yeah,
gotcha.
Because the National Park Service sometimes, or you know, any of our state or federal conservation lands, they have roads, and some of their staff use them for land management purposes, and we get that, we understand, but we still count roads like that in our calculation. And so we haven't confirmed that calculation just yet. We've been gallivanting all over the country ever since that first attempt here in Florida. We're sitting on it, and we'll pull it out of our hat here again whenever we get a chance.
Well, I find the Everglade thing interesting, because one of my contentions about remote areas is a great kind of sanctuary areas for wildlife and stuff. And the Everglades is one of the last strongholds, and it's the last stronghold in the U.S. for the small-toothed sawfish. And a friend of mine, Tanya Wiley, does with Havenworth Coastal Conservation, is dedicated to sawfish, and that's kind of like the last spot. Where these things, as they come up into the estuaries like that to spawn. And that's kind of like the last location. And I think in a lot of these remote areas, they're good sanctuaries for things like that. But while we're on the coast, because I want to go into some of this mountain stuff, cause that's kind of what we're doing here on the show, I got to come over to Texas, because I read your Texas thing, which was like reading an epic, like Stephen King novel, like length in Texas. It was like reading The Stand or something. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, and I was like, this is, and once again, I'm down the rabbit hole. I can't stop. I have to finish this. I have to sleep. But it's so fascinating. And you mentioned Laguna Atascosa Wildlife Refuge, and then a discovery you made in Texas that beaches are drivable.
Yep.
Yes.
So how does that factor into remote location?
It factors.
It does, man. And you read it on our website.
Yep.
In fact, the Texas Remote Spot Expedition Journal is not quite done yet. We want to fashion that into a magazine article somewhere, but thanks for having read that, man. To answer your question, it absolutely counts. And when we learned about the law that allows for driving on most or all of Texas beaches, we absolutely had to drop back and punt and recalculate the Texas remote spot. Our initial calculation placed the remotest location in Texas along the south,
out in the Trans-Pecos.
Texas shoreline. Yeah. Right where you can drive down the beach with automobiles and inside of a national wildlife refuge too, which we find that to be unfortunate. We're conservationists too, Chester, of course. And I think most of America is, honestly. And, we couldn't lightly travel to a state remote spot and risk the chance of watching automobiles 30 feet in front of us traveling in single file down the beach.
It would have made it easier to just drive to the spot.
Yeah, so
we actually came across this same issue in Virginia and Maryland as well, because when the spot landed on the Barrier Islands, there are strips of the beach there that you're allowed to drive on. And so when that kind of thing happens, we pull up the map for whatever public land that is, whether it's a wildlife refuge or a national park, and we look at where the roads are on their, you know, driving roadmaps that they all have. And then I digitize in that beach stretch where you're allowed to drive. I would digitize that in as a road. So that those beach roads are roads. If you go to the beach, you see the tire tracks, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I assume your original spot was probably going to be somewhere on the South Padre Island.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And that's exactly, I mean, it's a beautiful area. Our water actually gets kind of clear in Florida-ish down there for Texas.
Oh.
Because most of where I live, the upper coast, it's very, you know, we get the wrong side of the Mississippi for water clarity. But
yeah, absolutely, man. And all those big Texas rivers are coming in, too.
Yep, yep. So, but you found the remote spot out in the Trans-Pecos, out near in the Big Bend area. And,
that's right.
You know, I think you said 6.6 miles at that point was your furthest from a road.
When we come back on More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI, we'll continue our discussion about the most remote locations in Texas and beyond.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. This is Chester Moore, and if you have ever wanted to social distance, we have the goods for you. An incredible interview I did with Project Remote. Find the most remote locations in America.
There are so many like old ranches and stuff out in these areas that have private roads and like a lot of like that part of Texas is like Texas is 97% privately owned. I mean, it's 97% privately owned. And other than Big Bend and Big Bend State Park and a couple of management areas and Guadalupe Mountains Park, that entire region of the state is privately owned. And a lot of the landowners are rich landowners that have, you know, 100,000 acres, 75,000 acres. And they make a lot of roads and stuff out there that you might not see like these, you know, it might not like be a well-used road, but under the qualifications of a road and a travel access, it certainly calculates.
Yep, absolutely.
Absolutely. And Rebecca had to spend 100 hours.
I had to digitize all those roads.
Have fun. Yeah.
We can see those roads from space, if you will, when Rebecca zooms in on her mapping software. They are visible, and we pull teeth that she'll call me in. Hey, honey, you think this is a road? and we'll come and we'll look at it together and make the call, and she'll digitize it in and then recalculate. It's yet another calculation attempt, and we'll find another possible remote spot and then zoom into that spot and more often than not see another road that we missed. Actually, Chester, that brings up a point. We didn't really miss the road. It's just the fact that America is more developed than any of us know. And that's one of the stories unfolding across this great country of ours is that we're developing it much more rapidly than geographers can map it. And so that's unfortunate. Makes for hard calculations too.
I can imagine. Absolutely. So one of the states that that I love and has fascinated me with this was Montana. And I mean, there's so much open spaces there, and you have, of course, that big intact Yellowstone system, which has a I was in Yellowstone in September, and I did a on my radio show. I also have a radio show called More Outdoors. I did a broadcast. As soon as I got back, I said, I felt like I was 200 years in the past in the Lamar Valley of Yellowstone, except, I mean, thank God I got to drive the road because I got to photograph Grizzly. But there's a road going through the middle of it. So it's not like roads are necessarily bad, but I think we have to have a point where we start going, you know what, let's leave some wilderness, what we got left. And so let's talk. Let's talk about that whole idea of Montana. Because if you think of a big open place in the lower 48, that's kind of probably the state that comes to mind.
That or Wyoming, both two, absolutely, yeah.
So what did you find there? If you had that much problem in Texas, I mean, what did you find up there?
Well, there are some pretty substantial public lands in Montana, mm-hmm. and wilderness areas. And so I think that was the big difference between calculating Texas and Montana, is that there are huge national forests and the wilderness areas are large there. So it didn't necessarily land on private land a whole lot for Montana. So anywhere where we have large amounts of public land, it's usually almost all the time the spots land on public land. But it's a lot easier to calculate when there are large pieces of land.
A wilderness area by definition is unroaded. Mm-hmm. And so when our calculation for a state places the remotest location inside the center of a giant wilderness area, we're pretty certain at that point that we're not going to find another road and have to recalculate. And so, you know, many of our big western states have giant roadless wilderness areas. And more often than not in the west, our state remote spots are located within such of a wilderness area. And that's what happened in Montana. There is a place out there that Westerners lovingly call the Bob, and it refers to the Bob Marshall Wilderness. And it's actually a wilderness complex. It's a bunch of wilderness areas all adjoining the Bob Marshall Wilderness. And so all of them together function as an even greater ecosystem and a much larger roadless area. Man, we had the greatest time as a family. The Montana Remote Spot Expedition was It was our longest exposure in the wilderness as a family on Project Remote thus far. And back at that point, we were still carrying Skyla on our back.
Oh, were we?
Rebecca primarily was doing that because she's super.
Oh, were we? I got that. Yes. Yeah. Got it.
See, his pack got lighter over time as we ate our food. Mine got heavier.
I hear you.
It was incredible. It was a 10-day exposure for us as a family, and just every day was a challenge and an adventure. And we have that written up on our website too, man. Maybe you had a chance to read that.
Yeah, 18 miles, right? 18 miles Montana, which is pretty dang impressive. But shifting over right next door to Wyoming, you have what, at least at the time of what I saw here, it was the most remote that you looked at so far.
It is true. That is thus far the remotest location in the lower 48 mm-hmm. that we have found on the continental mainland. That's an important qualifier there. And we think there's a possibility to be in an even more remote location on an island somewhere, but we haven't confirmed that for the lower 48. Alaska certainly will have a more remote location than Wyoming, but that was our remotest location to ever stand in thus far as a family on Project Remote. And that was another extremely long trip, like 7 or 8 days, as I recall. And the Montana and the Wyoming trips each were about 70 to 75 miles of travel into and out of the remote spot as a family. And we lugged all our gear and our precious little daughter. Had amazing times, man. We saw grizzlies.
That's what I was going to ask you. I have to ask about the critters, especially the predators. What did you see in these locations? I mean, did you see grizzlies, bears, moose, you know?
Two grizzlies in Montana. Mm-hmm. And they were two of the kinds of sightings that we as nature lovers would want to have. Yes, it was exhilarating. Just any time you lay eyeballs on something large enough to take your life, especially standing there in the wilderness is an exhilaration. But both of those times, one of the bears was about a quarter mile off, and as soon as he saw us, he or she bolted into the brush and never to be seen again. But the other one was more like 50 yards off and did exactly the same thing, bolted in a line tangent to where we were standing. We just saw the brush and the leaves flying, and it looked like a galloping bison going through the brush, but certainly was a grizzly and was not barreling toward us, at least.
And that's a very good thing.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Man. You got your daughter on your back. Everything you care about you is standing right there with you, and you're vulnerable, but most bear encounters are completely benign like that, albeit still very exciting. But we had bear spray with us, but again, with something so large coming at you, you know, you're not sure that anything is going to work against it.
And from a fear factor, I guess, when we were in Wyoming, I was more concerned with the mountain lions than I was with the grizzlies, yeah, because we had such a small child. And she's a pretty independent person. Yep. She'll just go play far from us. So that was more of a concern in Wyoming, even though there are grizzlies galore in Yellowstone. But in the back of my mind, that was more of a concern.
Well, I worked with captive mountain lions on and off for a long time. And I can tell you this much, their demeanor, even captive cats, would change when a kid walked by. I have seen a lion that I've been photographing, and I would be laying on my belly, and he's in this huge enclosure, naturalistic, and I'm getting these great photos, and he's just sitting there, and it's hot in the summer, looking at me, and I'm waiting for him to do something interesting, and then, like, the kid of the people who own the sanctuary walk by, the eyes just turn, and then gets in that mode, you know. So
I can definitely tell you that after Wyoming.
I can attest that, like, that is I always warn people, like, if you have a kid hiking in lion country, and now I actually the dynamic of coyotes is starting to change.
When we come back on More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI, we will continue our discussion on the most remote locations in America. Welcome back to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI. This is Chester Moore, wrapping up our conversation, the ultimate in social distancing, with Project Remote. And coyotes are something I'm starting to warn people about when you have little kids, especially like 3-4-year-old little kids. Mm-hmm. You're starting to see a lot more coyote aggressive behavior in some of these areas because people are feeding them. And it's a pretty crazy thing. You don't want to feed the predators, that's for sure.
Yeah, right.
No doubt.
So when you're in these areas, did you ever come across rutting moose?
We saw a moose in Maine.
In Maine, okay.
And the moose was not rutting, but
you're lucky.
If you pressure a moose, they're certainly going to get defensive, and whether they're rutting or not. And we were not close enough to cause this moose to be defensive.
Yeah,
up in Maine, we just had
the bison.
Oh yeah,
the bison of South Dakota.
Oh man, the Badlands bison is a creature that became perturbed about our too close presence.
Oh boy,
it did just what people say it will do. It lifted that tail up a little bit, mm-hmm, and it got sort of broadside to us to show us the massive hulking body. And
we had to add an extra at least half mile onto our trek so that we could give that. But we went over the hill.
We were walking around the bison.
You got it. Yep.
I bet you, man. We were more afraid of that bison, I think, than just about anything.
Well, I mean, in Yellowstone, they hurt more people or anything. And I have a photo to show why. There's this little spot you pull over, you know, to take photos and stuff, and there's this lady the only people that ever do this I see are typically Midwesterners who've never been out in the wilderness. Like, if you're from Texas, you're used to like rattlesnakes and feral hogs, and you know, they always end up being from some place that they've never seen this stuff. And there's this lady, and there's about a 2,000-pound bull walking by. He's eight feet, and he's as big as you get, you know. And he's 8 feet, I mean, probably 7 or 8 feet past the little barricade. And she walks right over, and I said, lady. She's like, you don't do that. She goes, no, it's just a buffalo. And I'm like, they hurt more people. You see these signs? You know, so she kind of You know, and I said, well, if this happens, I'm going to sell this photo to National Geographic. So, like, I started taking pictures.
Oh, man. Yeah, right.
And she didn't get hit. The bison kind of looked at her like she was an idiot and kind of walked off. But people don't understand, you know, some of that dynamic. And I really understand, and people who don't spend that time in the outdoors really don't know the nature of it. I mean, like bears, we're talking about grizzlies, but I just had an article in Sports Afield, and the opening line of my article was, I'd rather be attacked by a grizzly than a black bear. And because there is very, very in-depth studies that almost all black bear attacks on people are predatory in nature. Most grizzly attacks are territorial, so they might kill you, but they're usually probably not going to eat you. But almost every 89% of black bear attacks documented in America were predatory, and they were a large male. And so I tell people, you know, you might see a grizzly and freak out, which you should. I mean, because a grizzly is going to be more aggressive by nature, but the attack from a black bear. So if you get attacked by a grizzly, you play dead. You get attacked by a black bear, you got to fight back. And people tend to, because I was talking to people while we're watching the grizzly, about a quarter mile away, like you talked about, and I'm eating an elk kill, a sow and two cubs in Yellowstone. And they were like, well, we go up in the Adirondacks, and they're from New York, and we see black bears, and we don't worry. We just kind of walk by them. I'm like, no. Just use your caution. Don't respect that animal, you know? So that's part of what I do, is try to educate people. And I really appreciate you guys educating us about, you know, the wild areas, and then also how, you know, maybe some of these spots aren't as wild as we thought. One of the ones I was kind of surprised by, but, you know, it was Colorado. Colorado had a pretty small remote area.
It surprised us, too. It was, you know, all the Rocky Mountain states we figured were going to be very remote. Mm-hmm. But it was less than 10 miles from a road. It's less than 9 miles from a road, and that was very surprising.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, looking at Colorado, you know, you see all these mountains and stuff. You think, well, there's got to be, you know, a road there. But if you start zooming in, you'll see, you know, there are a lot of roads on the mountains, around the mountains, into the mountains.
Yeah,
there really are. They're mainly associated with the mining industry out west, but other stuff too. You know, ranching and BLM lands have roads on them, and you know. Colorado, there has to be something that we're working on is a concept called road density within a state. And just because a state doesn't have a really super large single maximum distance from a road doesn't necessarily indicate that the rest of the state is you know, completely developed or... You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there may not be as many roads in Colorado as, say, the next state. And just because it didn't have the remotest state remote spot doesn't necessarily mean there are more roads per unit area in that state. So we're kind of working on a concept to compare state by state with called road density. And we still think a place like Colorado is a fairly remote state, and you can get a lot of places within it away from roads, but we're just not sure about that. I think that would be a heck of a lot more time staring at a computer for Miss Rebecca.
Thanks,
here,
honey.
Yeah,
so there may be a lot of spots in Colorado that are less than 9 miles from a road versus not many spots in Wyoming that are 21 miles from a road.
Sure, that makes sense. You know, even like the Trans-Pecos area of Texas, I mean, some of these private roads, there might be one rancher drive it once a month, you know.
Yep.
Right.
But they're there, so that fits the qualification. But it's
And also that's not that leads to the being able to calculate it. So in Florida, a lot of the larger roads, the state roads and the U.S. highways, there are data for number of vehicles per day that travel those roads, but for obviously, most of the roads in the country, that is not available. So we couldn't really use that frequency of travel in part of our definition.
Has there ever been any, have there ever been any of these sites in a national and scenic river area?
National recreation area. Let's see. thinking. We certainly traveled through some on the way to remote spots.
Look, I got them all. No, there were no National Scenic River. There was National Recreation Area.
Okay. Hold on.
And Boundary Water.
Rio Grande. So the Rio Grande in Texas was our mechanism of travel.
Okay.
Get into and out of the Texas remote spot. Our primary method was along the Rio Grande. We put in a canoe at Rio Grande Village in the Big Bend National Park and canoed downstream through that marvelous Boquillas Canyon area. And at some point, that got us to within about a mile and a half of the remotest location in all of Texas. And then we did the rest of it on foot up the side of a cactus-laden boulder scree field of a mountain. But anyway, that Rio Grande area would be a national wild and scenic river.
You mentioned mining, like old mining things around mountains and stuff like that. And, you know, mentioned remoteness being part of, like, you know, wildlife management and how we can restrict some access in terms of vehicles and things like that. And I've been doing some research on the Rio Grande cutthroat, a trout. Actually, there used to be Rio Grande cutthroat in that part of Texas, in some certain drainages, and it was documented by numerous people back in the late 1800s. And it seems like one of the issues with it was stream pollution and stuff, and some different access and damming off and that kind of stuff in that region of the Trans-Pecos because of that kind of access, you know. So once again, it shows, even looking back, some of these access issues might have been problems for, you know, stream quality or water flow and all those kind of things that we look at.
Absolutely, Chester. You're touching on a really important aspect here of what we're trying to do, which is raise awareness nationwide about the impact that roads have on ecology all over the country. And you just touched on a great one there. Good on you for, man, you know a lot about wildlife all over the country. That's great. I didn't know that about Rio Grande cutthroat.
I'm obsessed with this kind of stuff, so.
I love it. We are too, man. It's a challenge learning something special like that state by state, and it's a reward.
Thank you for listening to More Outdoors on News Talk 560 KLVI, celebrating our 21st year here. We invented social distancing in the great outdoors a long time ago. God bless all of you and have a great outdoors weekend.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.